Greetings, Couch Potatoes, across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, Weird, Zootopia Plus, Mythic Quest Season 3, and Tulsa King. I'm also going to be talking about the news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring My Father's Dragon. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And for as long as it lasts, you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Quick reminder before the news, check out my new book, The Organ Grinder, a tribute to 80s slasher films, and that is available on Kindle in the Amazon store. You can find it linked on the Fat Guys at the Movies page, and if you go to the Books tab on Fat Guys at the Movies, you get a link to my author page. And there's other things up there. There's a zombie Thanksgiving novelette. There's a zombie Christmas novelette. So you got all this stuff for the holidays. And that's all available through the book portal on the Fat Guys at the Movies page. But going to actual proper movie news, the box office, really quickly, we'll look at the fact that Black Adam did okay with a pretty decent drop from weekend to weekend with $18.3 million, which isn't bad, but the thing is, it's going to get slaughtered by Black Panther this weekend. And that beat out One Piece film Red, which was at number two with $9.4 million, which is another big success for Crunchyroll, which is Sony's anime arm that has released several notable pieces over the last couple of years. Ticket to Paradise dropped only 13%, which is a fantastic hold. Only 13% to $8.6 million for number three. And then Smile is still chugging away. It's at number four with $4 million, and that only had a 27% drop. So last week you had a lot of low drops for these movies, mainly because nothing big was really hitting. Pray for the Devil came in number five, and then it did okay. It did better than expected with a 45% drop. Banshees of Inisherin opened wide, and it got $2 million. That was good enough for seventh place. And Till held decently at number eight with just under $2 million. Halloween Ends came in at number 9 with 1.4. It's a 65% drop, so I think that's going to about do it for Halloween Ends at the box office. Terrifier 2 still kept in the top 10 at number 10 with $1.13 million, and that was enough to get it to $10 million over the week. So this little movie that they thought was going to be in theaters for just, I mean, 1 week release, kind of a Fathom Events kind of thing, ended up doing $10 million in theaters and still kind of going strong. Whereas Armageddon Time completely imploded in this catastrophic number, which I don't even know what the number is. It wasn't even in the top 10. So that's another one of those award films to kind of just shuffle away before things really start to heat up. Now, the one thing this isn't really news, but it's interesting. It's about Warner Brothers and the new CEO of Warner Brothers, Zaslav, is kind of pulling an Elon Musk, where he's out there talking about stuff and he apparently doesn't even know what he's talking about. He's talking about saying he wants to talk to J.K. Rowling and do more Harry Potter movies because he says we haven't done a Harry Potter movie in 15 years. I don't know what he thinks the Fantastic Beasts movies are. I mean, okay, yeah, sure. Harry Potter's not in them, but they're absolutely Harry Potter movies. It has been a lot less than 15 months since a Fantastic Beasts movie came out. We got one of those this summer. Now, those have fizzled in the United States. They tend to do better globally. But it's, to me, alarming that the head of a studio, the now head of the Warner Brothers studio, doesn't even know how long because even then, Harry Potter, the last Harry Potter movie came out, what, like 10, 11 years ago? So it's not been 15 years. And then he's talking about Superman movies because he doesn't care about any other hero. He doesn't care about Wonder Woman or Aquaman or Hawkman or Black Adam, even though Black Adam is doing well enough, not great, but it's doing well enough. He's just like, we need another Superman movie. We haven't had a Superman movie in 13 years. 13 years? You do realize that Man of Steel, the actual reboot of Superman, was only 9 years ago. And then they did Batman versus Superman in what, 2016 or something like that? And Justice League in 2017? And then while this didn't go to theaters, it was paid for on HBO Max. You had the Zack Snyder Justice League cut with that 4-hour monstrosity on HBO Max. And that came out last year. How are you telling me that Superman hasn't been in the movie theaters since what? You're talking about 13 years. You're talking about saying it hasn't, we haven't had a Superman movie since 2009. I mean, he's almost going all the way back to Superman Returns, which was what, 2006? So come on. I mean, you're the head of the studio. I understand, like, if my mom didn't know. I understand the average person on the street not know, oh, it's been about 15 years since Harry Potter has been in the theater. But the head of the freaking studio should know. Absolutely. I feel so sorry for James Gunn. James Gunn's trying to get the ship righted and trying to put together a multiverse of DC heroes. And you've got this crazy guy who heads Warner Brothers talking about, I only want to do Superman movies. And let's talk to J.K. Rowling about doing another Harry Potter, even though it definitively ends. It ends. They have a flash forward like a dozen or so years to when Harry Potter's middle-aged. And it's like, not much has happened. So, oh my heavens. This is just the guy going, this worked. Let's try and do it again. Let's try and create magic in a bottle. I don't want to try anything new, which is exactly what Kevin Feige and Marvel was not doing. I mean, they're making movies about multiverses and trees and raccoons, and they're doing well. Poor James Gunn. He's got one heck of a hill to climb. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That song means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first trailer I want to play is for Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, which comes to Netflix on December 9th.
Papa! It speaks!
He's just a puppet!
No, I'm not! I'm a real boy!
People are sometimes afraid of things they don't know.
I don't understand.
Ah, we have found him, our star.
Everyone shall love you and call your name, Pinocchio.
You know what? I have to say, I have seen this already because it's an award film, so I've gotten a little bit of a buzz. But, this gives me an idea that this Pinocchio movie is not the same as Disney's Pinocchio. It is a very different film, and you can tell just if you were to go watch the trailer on YouTube, you can find it on YouTube, you can see the artistry in the stop motion work in this movie and the fact that it's clearly doing something very, very different than the Disney movie or either the original one from the 40s or the remake they did, that re-envisioning that they did with Robert Zemeckis on Disney Plus this summer. So if you want to see something very different, you want to see Pinocchio in a very different way, this thing's coming in December, and it very much fits in line with that holiday theme. The next one I wanted to look at really quickly is John Wick 4, which is in theaters on March 24th.
A new day is dawning. New ideas, new rules, new management.
Who is this?
The Marquis de Grammont.
Challenge him to single combat. Win or lose, it's a way out.
I don't sit at the table.
Your family does.
I'm going to need a gun.
If you win, the table will honor its word.
You know, God bless Keanu Reeves for being such a mensch that he is already, just a nice guy. Everything I've ever heard about him is he's just like the nicest guy on the planet. And the first John Wick was, I think, 2014. So we're talking about, like, for 9 years, he's been doing this John Wick franchise. This thing that seemed to be just a one-off movie almost 10 years ago has turned into this massive franchise. And this guy's in his 50s and he's still doing these action movies. You know, I think it's great that Keanu Reeves still has a career and he looks like he's having a heck of a lot of fun making these movies. So John Wick 4 should be a lot of fun. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Weird and Zootopia Plus. Because we can, can. Uh-oh. 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 And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Weird. This actually came out last week, but I didn't get a chance to see it early, and also I was so full of other stuff that I had to talk about last week, I didn't get a chance to. Right now, there are so much stuff happening in terms of the streaming services. There is a lot of content being pushed out there, and I know people have complained about that, and my only complaint is it's hard to cover everything. I don't cover documentaries or foreign films that much because once you cover one, you got to cover them all. And there's hundreds of documentaries on hundreds of foreign films. I realize that limits myself as a critic, but I try to see as much as I can theatrically. But now you're dealing with all this stuff online, which I think is great because there's so many options. And Weird is on Roku. It's on the Roku channel. So first of all, how to get this? If you have a Roku device, it'll default to it. I think the advertising window is closed for that. They were heavily advertising it on the Roku devices last week when it came out. But just go to the Roku channel, which should be preloaded into your device, and you don't even need to have an account for it. And they have free movies on there. And if you don't have a Roku device, you can get it. You can get it on an Apple TV. You can get it on a Fire Stick. Anywhere you can download apps, just download Roku. You don't have to have the actual Roku device. But anyways, Weird is a totally true and not at all made up biopic of Weird Al Yankovic, which shows his rise to fame as an 80s pop star.
I'm tired of people thinking I'm some kind of joke.
Your dad and I agreed it would be best if you just stop being who you are and doing the things you love.
My whole life, all I wanted.
I'm afraid we found your son at a polka party.
Make up new words to a song that already exists.
Oh. Well, you should do that then.
My little hungry one. Hungry one. Open up a package of my banana.
First of all, I have to say, I'm so tired of musician biopics. They all kind of follow the same thing, you know? I mean, it's like Bohemian Rhapsody was a good movie and Rocketman was a good movie, but they kind of felt like they were hitting the same points because most artists go through that. You throw enough money and fame at people and you're going to get people doing drugs and having crazy sex life. And so it just seems to be the same story with every character, and that's what they take advantage of with Weird. This is all done completely tongue-in-cheek, but boy, they commit to all of it. And it is very funny. Now, a lot of people are comparing this to Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story. That's the one that John C. Reilly did. That was a fake musician biopic. It was a send-up. It was a spoof of musician biopics. And it's very funny. It's a good movie, but it was crass. It was specifically designed to be R-rated. And I think that hampered it a little bit. You know, it was kind of basing itself on Walk the Line, which was the Johnny Cash biopic. But Weird commits to all the points that happen in a musician biopic, from the disapproving parents who won't let him play an accordion, and like the cool kids from school invite him to a polka party, and he gets in trouble because he was carousing at a polka party. And then he starts making these songs, these parody songs, and gets on Dr. Demento. But when he sees Dr. Demento, who's played by Rainn Wilson, every time Dr. Demento shows up, he's still wearing the top hat and the bow tie. He's basically, you know, even when he's in a hot tub, he's dressed in a bow tie and a top hat. And so these sort of absurd things and parodies, not just these movies, but it has this wonderful scene that parodies Boogie Nights. It's a pool party. You may have heard about it if you've read anything about this, which has, I don't know, like a dozen or so like fake cameos to it. It's got somebody playing Salvador Dali and somebody playing Tiny Tim and somebody playing Wolfman Jack. And I mean, they've got all these different characters, somebody playing Gallagher, and everybody's, you know, all those shtick type of either artists or musicians or comedians who were somebody who was sort of a little bit bizarro, you know, the kind of things that would show up on Dr. Demento, but he was just mostly music. And this is so brilliantly put together because it doesn't feel boring at all. It moves from point to point and it gets more and more ridiculous, but it stays true to that concept. It commits to the joke. And that's what works. And Daniel Radcliffe is brilliant in this. You know, he's not going to do any more Harry Potter movies for Warner Brothers unless they throw him $50 million. But he's brilliant in this movie because he plays Weird Al completely straight as the crazy musician. Weird Al's in the movie. You've also got Evan Rachel Wood playing Madonna, and she's hilarious in it because they make her almost a Bond villain. It's really funny. I gotta say, if you have, you know, the tongue is firmly in cheek, the accordion is strapped to the chest, and the movie is a ton of fun to watch. Check it out. It's on the Roku channel. I say Weird totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Zootopia Plus. This isn't actually a movie. It's a TV series on Disney Plus. So it's Zootopia Plus. They're taking advantage of the plus going everywhere. The secondary characters of the Oscar-winning film get their own short stories in the Land of Animals.
We've got a spectacular show with some amazing talent.
Dad, take the kids home and watch out for Timmy. He's a biter.
I'm not changing any diapers.
The producer said the ratings were dropping.
Of course they were. Look at you guys.
No.
I'm the Duke of Weaseltown.
Oh, Manny, you complete me.
Welcome to Zootopia's biggest talent competition.
They've done several of these things on Disney Plus where they make these short animated things anywhere from like 2 minutes to 10. They did a bunch of the Scrat short films based on the Ice Age, you know, the little saber-tooth squirrel. Now, that's a Fox property, but it is owned by Disney. And they did, like, I don't know, five or six of these short films. They did the I Am Groot series earlier this year. They did the Cars on the Road where Mater and Lightning McQueen go on a road trip together. And this is a cut from the same cloth. There was the Baymax had a bunch of them. There were these short, less than 10-minute bits, and each one of these Zootopia things is 7 or 8 minutes is about how long each one is. And they actually all take place in the structure of Zootopia. So there are scenes in Zootopia, the movie, that these shorts either lead into, or there's a key moment where they cross paths, which I think is kind of cool because if you're a fan of Zootopia, you can say, oh, this happens at this point in the movie or whatever. Like, for example, when the rabbit stops this giant donut from crushing this little shrew or this rodent, whatever it is. So, I mean, so the idea of sort of shoehorning it into these Easter eggs, I mean, that's cute. It'd be more effective if there was, I think, a bigger Zootopia fan base, you know. But, you know, they're cute. They're not great. The problem is you're using a lot of secondary characters. So some of these characters, there's a reason they don't have a big presence in the movie. They're gags or their jokes or their side quests in the movie. And they work for 7 or 8 minutes. So they do, but you don't want to see a whole full series on these. These are background characters at best, you know, so it's cute and it's full of Easter eggs for Zootopia diehards. But it does struggle to make the secondary characters really pop. Still, I'm going to say Zootopia Plus kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'll be talking about Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, and Mythic Quest Season 3.
Who let the dogs out?
Hoot, 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 hoot.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about this little independent film called Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. With the death of King T'Challa, his family and Wakanda itself must face a new adversary and keep their government stable.
They came from the water. He has superhuman strength.
His people. Do not call him general or king. They called him Kukulkan, the feather serpent god. Killing him will risk eternal war.
Okay, this is a huge movie. It's going to be ginormous. Why? Because it's a Black Panther movie, and Black Panther is wildly popular. Part of the reason it's wildly popular is it taps right into the African-American market. And let's be fair, there aren't a lot of movies made that aim directly for that market. Certainly not huge movies like this. And T'Challa and what he stood for and what Chadwick Boseman stood for in bringing this character to life on the big screen is not going to be forgotten. And if you look at the whole cast and the crew and director Ryan Coogler, the big point of this movie is to make the movie primarily for the African-American audience, but it's something that anybody can appreciate because its themes transcend race and politics. And there's nothing wrong with that because, my God, 99% of the Hollywood movies are made with the white person's audience in mind. Then you have to transcend that to reach other cultures and other people in the audience. Now, we all know the story behind the scenes where Chadwick Boseman had colon cancer and he ended up dying in 2020. They were not able to make this movie with him. So they had to retool things. And you go in knowing that, and they make this movie as much a tribute to Chadwick Boseman and the character of T'Challa, but really Chadwick Boseman. Because when they're speaking about T'Challa in these very sad situations, you know they're also speaking about Boseman. And that was such a sad thing to happen to him, and I think it was good that they did not recast. And so some of the criticism I'm seeing about Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, is they wanted to do one thing with it, but then they couldn't because they had their lead actor die. And they should not have recast him. That was a smart move because it would have been jarring and I feel disrespectful. Also, because the character of T'Challa is not inexplicitly tied to Black Panther. You know, like Superman's Superman. He's the last son of Krypton. You can't, like, have another Superman. Now, you can have other Kryptonians, but you can't have another Superman. But, you know, somebody like Iron Man or Spider-Man or even Batman and anybody else can take that mantle. That's kind of the point here. And so they pivot to making the main character or his sister, played by Letitia Wright. And it's messy at times. The plot is messy. And I'm not going to say sloppy, but it's messy in the sense that it's dealing with unresolved issues because you had the lead actor die. And so the character doesn't get resolved the way you want him to. He had a glorious return in Endgame. And then you didn't realize he was going to die. Well, I mean, you knew it in the movie, but they don't give any background. They don't give any history. They don't give any explanation to his death. So you feel empty from that. But that's also what happens for real in life. You don't always get good explanations. You don't always get easy explanations. And I found this movie very complex in that sense. And the characters, they at times brood and they at times cry and they at times refuse to accept things. And at times the characters are very frustrating. But again, that's very real. And I thought that the entire cast and crew brought that to the movie and bared their own souls in this. And you get a very authentic and true movie, even if it's messy. And that's okay. And then you have the ultimate story of they're furthering the Marvel storyline where they've brought in the character of Namor, the Submariner. Who goes back, I mean, he goes back like to the late 30s, I think, like predating Marvel Comics as what Marvel Enterprises was. And he was an anti-hero back in the day. I mean, he would just indiscriminately just kill people. I mean, I have this old reprint of one of his stories where he just goes to Manhattan, just kills hundreds of people. And that's what the story is. So if you think that comics and video games are violent now, you should read some of this stuff from the 30s. I mean, this stuff was shocking. I remember as a kid reading it and not liking that character at all, with good reason. So the character of Namor, he's a dark character and he is an extremist in his beliefs. And the whole gist of his character from the comics is he wants to take war to the surface. And the Wakanda kind of trying to stand in his way. Will they join with him on the war against the rest of the world? Or will they fight against him? And that conflict is there. And I find it really fascinating that, you know, almost the entire movie, I'd say, you know, 95% of the movie doesn't even take place in America. It's all in the ocean and in Wakanda. And that's cool. Because here you've got these two armies fighting each other, and the white people are just caught in the middle. Not even. They're just sort of ancillary background noise. And that's kind of an interesting take on this movie. Now, something else that's really interesting with the movie is, you know, it's all about Wakanda having all this vibranium. And in Namor's world underneath the water, they've got vibranium. So historically, let's just say a country of people of color did not fare well when they had resources. There's a curse to it. There's actually a term. I've heard it before where it's like the curse of the resources, where if you have these resources, colonists would come in and basically rape and pillage the land. And so you have these two societies that escaped that and they have to take control of their stuff. But there's always the threat that the rest of the world's going to come after them for their resources. And that's kind of a brilliant socio-political angle to this. But I really enjoyed Black Panther Wakanda Forever. It does run a little long. It's Coogler's thing. But I liked it even more than the first one, because it's not really an origin story. It's more of a continuation of the story. So, you know, the movie serves as a tribute to Chadwick Boseman, as well as bringing the characters of Wakanda into a bigger, messier, and more complex world. Black Panther Wakanda Forever totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I'm going to just blast through this one really quick because I'm way behind. Mythic Quest Season 3, that's on Apple TV. Ian and Poppy are trying to make it on their own as game designers while Mythic Quest is headed towards a film adaptation.
Mythic Quest is way better off without them.
This is our masterpiece. We did it! We really did it!
Yes!
MQ's doing well. I know you guys didn't think I could do it.
No, we literally haven't said your name in a year.
Oh.
I'd like to introduce you to our newest employee.
I'm glad you're back.
You know, as janitor, I see a lot of things.
But you have nothing to worry about. There's nothing, like, strange or nefarious going on. And even if there was, you'd never know it.
Sorry, wait, what? He's always wanted to bring MQ to Hollywood, but I'm the first one to pull it off.
This is a great workplace comedy, and it deals a lot with the geeky nature of video games. Now, I'm not a gamer, but I know a lot of gamers, and I understand a little bit of the culture. One of the things that this new season of Mythic Quest is doing is it getting more and more into the characters. I love the dynamic between Ian and Poppy, and they kind of split the characters off doing different things. And while there's still a little bit of crossover between Ian and Poppy's world and Mythic Quest, it is sort of exploring where the characters split up. Because a lot of times in a sequel to a movie, they have a big group of characters, and then they'll split them up for the sequel because it gives them a chance to play around with the dynamics a little bit more and to delve more into the characters. And they do that here. They sort of slough off a lot of the gaming stuff because they've developed the characters enough that they can stand on their own, which might be frustrating for fans who loved the saturation of the video game world. So it's leaning more into the relationship comedy and the general workplace humor. And the deep dive into gaming culture takes a bit of a hit, but it still manages to work. I mean, it's still a very funny show, and I appreciate it, so I'm going to have to say Mythic Quest Season 3 rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, I'm going to be talking about Tulsa King and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring My Father's Dragon. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I'm going to continue on with the reviews, and I don't always do this. I like to do movies and TV series that have come out so that you can go watch them as soon as you hear the show. This, however, does not premiere until Sunday night. This is a show on Paramount Plus. Now, I don't think it's on CBS at all, but it's just strictly on Paramount Plus, which is, of course, Paramount's streaming service. But in Tulsa King, which is a new series, Sylvester Stallone plays a New York gangster fresh out of prison who is sent to Tulsa to expand the family business.
Tulsa.
What's Tulsa?
I want you to go there. There's nobody doing nothing. You can do whatever you want.
Name's Tyson. Welcome to Tulsa.
$2,000 a week. You drive for me now. What crew runs this neighborhood?
No crew up in here. We're in the middle of nowhere.
This is how it's going to work. I'll protect you from the gangs.
What gangs?
And the law.
This is legal.
You got to know your risk.
There was no risk until you came along.
This is created by Tyler Sheridan. Well, he's best known for doing stuff like Yellowstone. Wildly popular. And he's a big Western guy, and he does a lot of these modern Westerns. I mean, yeah, sure, he's doing like 1883 and previously on Yellowstone-type shows, but he kind of made a name for himself doing the American Western, but in a modern sense. He did the movie Hell or High Water with Chris Pine, and it had, I think, what was it, Jeff Bridges, and it was essentially a modern Western, only it was a Western-type story, but it takes place contemporary. And Tulsa King's very much like that. He's the guy going out west, but he's the bad guy. You know, sort of that anti-hero. Sylvester Stallone, his backstory is he's a felon. He's been incarcerated for, 20 or 25 years, and he never snitched. He never gave up any information. He never talked. He did his time, even though it was for decades, and now he's out, and he expects to be rewarded greatly by the family, and the family doesn't. The family sends him out to Tulsa. I'm not exactly sure why they haven't gotten that far in the show, but the whole point is that he feels completely abandoned because he thought he'd come back and be able to run some things there in New York, and they send him out west to, Podunk Cowtown. And it's him showing up into town and sort of trying to make his mark and figure out where to make his money. And it's kind of considered an untouched resource, even though, the towns out there certainly have their criminal element. I mean, all you got to do is watch something like Breaking Bad to understand the criminal element. But, Tulsa's pretty far south, but it's far enough removed that it's probably not getting the cartel influence that something like Albuquerque would get in New Mexico. But there's certainly gang issues and there's crime in Tulsa, but it's very different crime than what's in New York City. And it's the mob, the mafia from New York City, trying to get their family mitts into the grassroots of, so to speak, of this, even though there's already elements out there and that he's going to bump heads with. Now, the whole thing is Sylvester Stallone's the main character. So you got to like him. And Stallone works. Here's the thing about Stallone. Yeah, he comes across as the tough lunkhead guy, but there's really a connection he makes with the audience. He's very compelling on screen. And in this, you really like him. I mean, it's actually some of the better acting Stallone's done because he's trying to do something different. And he really kind of bears himself out there and he lets himself be charming but tough. And that's what works in the show. But that also kind of stands in its way because, is he a good guy and a great character? It's that thing where they're still trying to, at least in the first couple episodes, still trying to figure out what they want him to be, whether he's the anti-hero, whether he's the thug, whether he's the thug with the heart of gold. I think this has yet to be developed. Now, they're going to be dropping one episode every week. The first one, it's a good solid start, but you want to check out more of these. But I got to say, Stallone brings his rugged charm to make the show fun, though it does sometimes struggle with how dark it wants to be. Maybe not is, and maybe it'll be getting there. And we have yet to see what this show becomes, but I think it's a really good start. I'm going to say Tulsa King kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on My Father's Dragon. It's available on Netflix right now. A child who recently moved to the big city finds his way into a magical wild island where he must help an immature dragon become a hero.
Just sitting there on this little tiny island, an amazing real live.
Oh, dragon? My name is Elmer.
My name's Boris. Not as cool, but it goes with my face.
My father would soon set foot in places no child had ever been before. Dangerous.
Elmer!
Wild.
Help!
Strange places.
This is put together and animated by Cartoon Saloon, which is an Irish company, and they've done several movies in the past, and they're gorgeous movies. They did, like, The Secret of the Kells and Song of the Sea. Most recently, they did Wolfwalkers a couple years ago, which was on Apple TV+. And their animation looks like wood carvings, at least their older ones. They've sort of mainstreamed their animation for this one, so their big curves and pointed angles still works, and it's still apparent. And when you watch it, you say, okay, I can see where the style has come from Cartoon Saloon, but it doesn't feel as artistic, I guess you could say, or stylized as you had style, in particularly with Wolfwalkers or Song of the Sea, or Secrets of the Kells. All of them were very, they looked like they were done with wood carving. This one is a little bit more streamlined animation. But it's still a charming little story. I mean, it's being told from a woman is telling about her dad, and the woman's old, and so her dad's got to be much older. And so you're looking at this probably sometime in the Depression, where they had a small store in this small town, and they had a closed shop, and they moved to the big city, and they're struggling, and the mother's trying to keep her kid and her fed and warm and safe. And this kid ends up going on this little adventure. So it starts off in a very grounded way, but it goes into this fantasy world where he gets to this island that has all these animals that talk, but there's this dragon on the island. And the dragon is about as fit of a dragon as I am. I mean, I really identify physically with this dragon. I mean, this is not Smaug flying with his lean, sleek body over the world. This is a chubby little dragon who's got these dorky little wings, and it's a kind of a coming of age story with this kid and this dragon following their own destinies at the same time. It's very beautifully animated. Like I said, I do regret that some of the stylized elements of Cartoon Saloon's animation has been mainstreamed a little bit. It feels a little bit like, do you remember that movie that Laika did? You know, Laika did stuff like Paranorman and the Box Trolls and Coraline. And then they did this movie called The Missing Link. And that one seemed to have been meddled with a little bit too much by a studio. And I feel that this My Father's Dragon, because it doesn't have an Irish background story, because all those other movies do, Wolfwalkers, The Kells, and Song of the Sea, all have these Irish folklore stories. And because this isn't an Irish folklore story per se, it doesn't get the same artistic treatment. So, I mean, it's still wonderfully animated, but it has lost a little bit. And that's unfortunate. But it's still a charming movie. It's great for kids. It has some great messaging, and it has some very funny moments. It has some excitement and adventure. And we have these adventures a lot. You get these in books for kids where it's a very normal life, and then they go off and have this insane adventure with talking animals and dragons, and they got to come back home and everything's normal. You know, sort of that Scooby-Doo ending that, oh no, these things aren't real and you got to come back. And ultimately it's about finding the right way to do something and doing it on your own because you have to. And the movie, like I said, has some beautiful moments, and it has some great poignant moments, and it has some great messaging for kids. So it's very sweet. It's on Netflix right now. You can check it out. You know, it's not as culturally rich as the Cartoon Saloon's previous films, but this adventure through childlike wonder is still full of charm and compelling animation. I'm going to say My Father's Dragon kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
And that's it for the show. I got to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about The Inspection and A Christmas Story Christmas. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.